Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're very concerned about depression in the United States and around the world. In a few moments, you're going to find out how many Americans are actually depressed because of the medications they're taking. It's one of the side effects. And a whole lot more on health and healing. No guest today because I want to have more of our talk back, getting you engaged in issues to see how you think on an issue. We're going to talk about the military-industrial complex, how it's draining our resources, and why we do not protest it. Not a single protest anywhere in America about spending over $1.4 trillion. That's $700 billion that we see, and then another $700 billion they use for fighting their wars overseas, for example. We're also going to hear today from a medical doctor who is a big pro-vaccine advocate, but he has a caveat. This is interesting. I'll share it with you. And also, we're going to hear from a feminist who is challenging other feminists. You could agree or disagree in part or whole with what she's saying, but in my world, you listen to what everyone has to say, then you decide who makes sense, who doesn't, and that's what we're going to do. I think she has some points of view that we should pay particular attention to. We have also, if time permits, a commentary from Chris Hedges from Truthdig on scapegoating Iran. Also from the World Socialist Web, Amnesty International reports that the U.S. is guilty of war crimes. Why is nothing being said about it? And how the war industry corrupts the U.S. Congress, by Medea Benjamin and Nicholas Davies. I don't think we'll get to everything, but we'll get to a lot. We're going to begin with the idea that we have a nation that is depressed. In fact, according to the University of Illinois, a new study shows that more than one-third of U.S. adults may be using prescription medication that have the potential to cause depression or increase the risk of suicide. And that because these medications are common and often have nothing to do with depression, patients and healthcare providers are simply unaware of the risk. I mean, how many times have you heard that someone committed suicide? Lately, we've had some own people commit suicide, and people said, why? And there was some people think, well, Anthony Bourdain was calling out Clinton, Hillary Clinton and her husband, and the hypocrisy of the Me Too movement by not focusing upon what he did and her enabling it, and then attacking the people that tried to defend themselves. Well, highly unlikely. That goes over the boundary of reasonableness. But why weren't we told about the antidepressant medications he was taking? In fact, virtually all the people that I've been able to discover thus far who are well known were taking medications, and one of the side effects is suicidal ideation or attempted suicide. Also, we are preparing a major report. It'll take a full hour to present it. But we've looked back at every single case of a mass shooter in the last 30 years. 95% were on medications. And the medication side effects included homicidal tendencies, paranoia, delusional psychoses, the very kind of mindset that could put you into going out and killing people and feeling nothing about it, emotional withdrawal, where you don't care about the people you're hurting. Why not a word anywhere about that? Why is it always about gun control? So this is the latest from University of Illinois, this study, and they looked at an awful lot of people in this particular study. So you're looking at 26,000 adults who were on meds, and in a 7-8 year period, these are the ones that ended up committing suicide, or were depressed, I should say. and yet no one was told that, take this med, you're going to be depressed. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So before you take any medication, look at the side effects. From the University of Otago, which is down in New Zealand, kiwi is able to help your bowel health, and daily consumption of kiwi, now you can have it just eating kiwi, that's probably the best way, but 4 weeks of taking kiwi each day was able to improve bowel movements by more than one bowel movement per week, which is good. And this was part of the New Zealand Institute for Plant and Food Research. Quote, an increase of greater than one bowel movement per week in a symptomatic population is considered a clinical meaningful magnitude of effect, which means in lay language, and this was published in Nutrition Research, that let's say you're having two bowel movements a day, ideally three. The general rule is this. As you consume a meal, you vacate the previous meal. Unless, of course, you're consuming meats and sugary refined carbohydrates, in which case they don't move through the intestine and they frequently cause dehydration. If you're dehydrated, you're also going to not be regular. But the kiwi allows for one more movement, and that is substantial. So that's helpful. What they found also at the International and American Association of Clinical Nutritionists and published in the Journal of Sports Medicine Physical Fitness is that consuming the French oak wood extract, it's a liquid extract, French oak wood extract, and oak wood is two words, O-A-K-W-O-O-D, was able to influence in recovery of influenza. And now while the malaise and fatigue that follow the flu are well known to most individuals, researchers have also revealed an increased risk of bacterial infection and heart disease during this period. So the study enrolled patients during a 3 days that followed a 6 to 10 days of the influenza. Quote, individuals over the age of 65 are the most susceptible group for complications from the flu, and since this age group typically has a weakened immune system, it takes even longer to fully recover from nagging flu symptoms like fatigue and feeling of weakness, end quote. But when they were able to take 300 milligrams of French oak wood extract for 3 weeks, after 10 days, participants who received the oak wood extract experienced improvement in heart rate, oxygen saturation, strength, recovery after exertion compared to the unsupplemented group. So that's good. Just, again, something else to help us. From Seoul National University College of Medicine, published in the British Medical Journal Public Health, they looked at 133,608 Korean men and women, and here's what they found. Sleeping too much is bad for you. Sleeping too little is bad for you. Now, the body's pretty good at making sure that you sleep the length of time that your body requires for restoration, repair, cleansing, detoxification. The more stressed you are, the more your body is going to have to deal with stress-related physiological conditions. If you're around computers, cell phones, blue fields, you're going to require more rest. And if you're healthier, if you exercise, if you're cleansed, if you're not overstressed, you could get by with less sleep and still be healthy. But if you're the average person, fewer than 6 and more than, let's say, 9 hours of sleep per day are associated with metabolic syndrome, that's diabetes and heart disease. And that's not good. So if you see people who are sleeping a lot, then let's get them checked for chronic fatigue syndrome, for hidden Lyme's disease they may not even be aware they have, or possibly underactive thyroid, or exhaustion of their adrenal glands. People that work under stress frequently exhaust their adrenal glands. I can't tell you how many people I've sat across. They say, I've had all the battery of tests. They can't find anything, but I'm exhausted all the time. Even when I sleep all night, I wake up exhausted. And so we do some studies on their adrenals, and lo and behold, they're exhausted. So then you repair the adrenal glands. By the way, the best nutrient for the adrenal glands, well, there's two, pantothenic acid and vitamin C. And once you start supplementing and getting them up to the level where they're rebuilding it, then suddenly they have energy back. People who deeply grasp pain or happiness of others process music differently in the brain. Southern Methodist University, in lay language, it simply says this. Higher empathy people appear to process music like a pleasurable proxy for human encounter in the brain regions for reward, social awareness, and regulation of social emotions. So that's what it means. And what it's telling us is not everybody is going to feel empathy or feel joy or feel elation about things. Some people are well, they're protecting themselves at one level and they're withdrawing their emotions. But high empathy people and low empathy people share a lot in common when listening to music, including roughly equivalent involvement in the regions of the brain related to auditory emotion and sensory motor processing. But there's one big difference. High empathy people, people who will see a situation and feel it. For example, I put up, oh, it was about 6 months ago, I put up a little short video. It was only about 2 minutes long. And it showed an older female chimpanzee who was clearly dying. She was in her final hours of life. And she was alone and in pain. And suddenly, her old caregiver, who she hadn't seen in years, came in, and she lit up, and she started to smile, and she reached out and touched his face. Oh, I promise you, if you watched it, you'd be in tears. The joy. Now, if you're a high empathy person, you really feel it. I mean, it sticks with you. So high empathy people feel deeper. They feel joy deeper and happiness deeper. They can feel sadness deeper. They can feel loss deeper. Some people, it's very easy for them to move on. Not so easy for these because of how they feel about things. Some people can see a destroyed rainforest and feel nothing. High empathy people, I posted a picture of a in the Burma area, they had clear cut all these millions of trees for palm plantation, for palm oil. And here's a solitary orangutan walking down the road. Its habitat destroyed, which means its food source is destroyed. A high empathy person is going to feel that. You're going to feel what it's like to be that orangutan. You're going to put yourself in that position. And just imagine what it would have been like for soldiers to be conditioned to kill and then be a high empathy person. How are you going to do that? You're going to pay a terrible toll on yourself, and frequently those are the people come back with post-traumatic stress disorder and cannot relate because something was so valuable to them, their sense of feeling has been blunted, interrupted with. Just something to think about, a new study. And all this is part of what they found from brain scans, showed distinctive differences based upon empathy. Also, your gut instinct, you know, you've heard everyone say, I felt it in my gut. I had this gut instinct. That's probably right. And that may have been the GPS of human ancestry. Researchers say the findings point to a need to further examine whether bariatric treatments and surgeries for obesity may adversely affect memory. And there's a study from the University of California on this. So ask anyone if they remember where they ate the juiciest food, whatever it is, the sweetest, you know, cupcake, or the smoothest smoothie. And they'll probably describe the location in great detail, down to the cross streets, the decor. Unique experiences people have an indelible impression of. And this study, published in Nature Communications, gives a possible explanation for food's prominence in memory. Let me put this in a simple way. The body's longest nerve, which is your vagus nerve, V-A-G-U-S, is the autobahn between what scientists have referred to as the two brains, the one in your skull, in your head, and the other in your gastrointestinal tract. The nerve is key for telling you that the tank is full and to put the fork down, because it helps transmit biochemical signals from the stomach to the most primitive part of the brain, the brainstem. But when, and that's what they call the gut-brain axis. But you can also have emotions connected to this as well. So when you have something that's extremely delicious, you'll say, this is the best tasting, you know, whatever I've ever had in my life. How would you remember? The gut tells you. In effect, the gut is also capable of neuron transmission. So you have two brains, one in the skull, one in the gut. And so your feelings about something at the intuitive level are almost always right. Nuts and peanuts can protect against major causes of death. This, according to the major university, Maastricht University in the Netherlands, published in the International Journal of Epidemiology. It confirms when you consume any nut, even peanuts, though that's not technically a nut, it's a legume, and lower death rates. That's pretty good. Just 10 grams. 10 grams is one-third of an ounce. So we're not talking about a lot to keep you from dying from several major causes of disease. So a handful of nuts each day keeps you alive longer. And from Great Ormond Street Hospital for Children, vitamin D supplements benefit children with kidney disease. That's good. And dementia can also be caused by hypertension or high blood pressure. This is from Neuromed in Italy, published in Cardiovascular Research and Oxford University, indicates that patients with high blood pressure are at a higher risk of developing dementia. That's important, because now we should start earlier in life to control our blood pressure, in which case we could be preventing dementia. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition, healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Now we're going to go to an audio clip, because I'd like your feedback on it. This is from a medical doctor of 27 years, a regular pro-vaccine board-certified physician, but he has a few caveats. Listen to what he has to say, then call in and share your points of view. 888-874-4888.
Here to speak against or for I've been studying vaccines for close to 17 years. I'm not really here to speak against or for vaccines. I am for the legislation. What I'm here to speak about is for science. And I think in all of this discussion, what I'm hearing is an attempt to get you legislators to pay attention to science. And I'm advising you and asking you to look at the science and not at the rhetoric. You have a very difficult task, which I empathize with, which is you have to try to make sense of the very august and respected institutions represented by pediatrics, the Department of Health, which are advising you that these medical interventions are safe and effective. Unfortunately, if you look at the science, you will not find the evidence to support those conclusions. Please look at the evidence. The days of Marcus Welby are over. We cannot just listen and take what our doctors say with blind faith anymore. And please don't do that. Don't listen to what you hear in this room today, except that it might inspire you to learn on your own what the truth is about vaccines.
That's
part of the truth that you will learn is that much of the outcomes have not been researched. We do not know the long-term effects of vaccination because they have not been researched. Why not? I think you can guess why not. How interested are the vaccine companies in finding out the answers to those questions? What independent research will be funded that will answer those questions? There has been some research done which indicates that those cohorts of children who have been fully vaccinated have a higher incidence of chronic illness than those cohorts that do not. This does not diminish the value of the vaccine in reducing the incidence of infectious disease. However, we are reducing the incidence of infectious disease with one stroke and increasing the incidence of chronic illness on the other. This is science. I'm not making this up. Okay? So, when I was in medical school, I was taught, don't talk about the bad side effects. You're going to scare the patient. If that's what you want your doctors to do, you should believe the doctors in the room who have told you there are no serious side effects.
Thank you, doctor. Doctor, I just have a quick question. You said you're into the science aspect of the of the medical practice. Are you an MD or are you a scientist? Or
I'm an MD.
You're an MD?
Yes.
And you specialize in the science of the medicine? Is that what it is?
Well, I would like to think all of us doctors go to the science, advise people based on science. In our medical training, we actually do not get training on the science of vaccination. That is not part of medical training.
Oh, okay.
And those people who say, and they have been people who said this, you should trust the doctors. They have the training. They have not received training in vaccination. That is not done in medical school or residency. And I would ask you to find a pediatrician who says they've been well-educated in the science of vaccines. They aren't.
I would assume that our Department of Health, there are certain vaccinations that, you know, that we want our children to have that would be required.
I ask people to investigate each and every vaccine on its own merits. My own pediatrician, for my own children, he has allowed my children not to be vaccinated above and beyond what my wife and I asked, but he says that he assumes that the CDC and the health department would not be recommending these vaccines if they were not safe and effective. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, if you look at the evidence, you will find that assumption to be unwarranted. Do the research. You will find the evidence does not support that assumption. It's nice in Marcus Welby world to believe that it is warranted. It is not warranted.
So, a pro-vaccine physician, a mainstream board-certified physician, is telling you the truth. Now, I would have a different conversation with him. I would say, what is your standard of determining efficacy? You say that they're not safe, but you're still saying it provides protection. Okay. I've written 51 articles, several published in important journals, on vaccine safety and efficacy, fully footnoted. I've never had to respond to a retraction or to correct anything, because we take a great deal of time to vet all of our facts. But I'm looking at the evidence on vaccine safety, and the very first people I speak with are toxicologists, professors of toxicology who've published hundreds of articles in peer-reviewed literature. And I simply ask them a basic question. Can you show me a single ingredient in any vaccine that is proven safe by itself? And the answer is always no. Can you show me ingredients in vaccines that by themselves, if you took this or if your doctor gave it to you, put it in a teaspoon, the same amount that would appear in a vaccine, would it be safe, like mercury or, aluminum or formaldehyde or polysorbate 80? They said, absolutely not. How many studies do you have in your scientific literature on the harm of aluminum? Oh, thousands. So we have thousands of studies showing that if any physician in the United States asks you to take a teaspoon of aluminum, that person could lose their license because that's been proven toxic and of no benefit whatsoever to the human body. That's correct. And a dozen toxicologists tell you this, and they support it with scientific literature. And yet, they will say that they're safe. There is no such thing as a safe vaccine. And by the way, that's not me saying that. The unintended consequences are that they're not safe. That's the Supreme Court of the United States. So then the question is efficacy. And if you're saying because it creates antibodies, that doesn't hold any scientific value, because I can show you people who are genetically programmed not to have, or they're not programmed, it's just their genes, they don't make antibodies to a lot of things, and yet they're protected. I can show you people that get a vaccine that have high antibodies that come down with the very disease to which they're vaccinated, measles or chickenpox, etc. And then how long does that antibody last? There's no two people where it's the same. Then why do you say vaccinate once and you're vaccinated for life? And then you say it didn't work, vaccinate twice, then three times. And every single time you're reinfecting a person with a lot of toxic material. Where is the single long-term study? There's never been a long-term study. It's all based upon artificial mathematical models, and we've deconstructed all of them. So that's the conversation I'd have with that gentleman. And here's something that Robert F. Kennedy shared yesterday from an article entitled Vaccines in the Liberal Mind from Common Dreams. Quote, instead of demanding blue ribbon safety science and encouraging honest, open, and responsible debate on the science, too many online outlets are silencing critics and shutting down discussion on this key public health and civil rights issue. Late last year, Slate published an investigative report detailing how pharmaceutical giant Merck used, quote, flawed, unquote, and unreliable pre-licensing safety studies to push through approval of its multi-billion dollar bonanza, the HPV virus vaccine. For veteran safe vaccine advocates like myself, the most shocking aspect of the expose was that Skate published it at all. Slate and other liberal online publications, including Salon, Huffington Post, and The Daily Beast, customarily block articles that critique vaccine safety in order, they argue, to encourage vaccination and protect public health. Motivated by this noble purpose, the liberal media, the supposed antidote to corporate and government power, has helped insulate from scrutiny the burgeoning vaccine industry and its two regulators, the FDA and the CDC. Both agencies have pervasive and potentially corrupting financial entanglements with the vaccine manufacturers, according to extensive congressional investigations. Ironically, liberals routinely lambaste pharma and its FDA enablers for putting profits over people. Recent examples include Vioxx, 100,000 injured. Merck paid more than $5 billion in fines and settlements. Abilify, Bristol-Myers Squibb, paid $515 million for marketing the drug to nursing homes knowing it can be fatal to seniors. Celebrex and Bextra, Pfizer, paid $894 million for bribing public officials and false advertising about safety and efficacy. And, of course, the opiate crisis, which in 2016 killed more Americans than the 20-year Vietnam War. What then makes liberals think that these same companies are immune from similar temptations when it comes to vaccines? There's plenty of evidence that they are not. Merck, the world's largest vaccine maker, is currently fighting multiple lawsuits brought up by its own scientists, claiming that the company forced them to falsify efficacy data for its MMR vaccine. The Slate article nowhere discloses that FDA licenses virtually all vaccines using the same Mouwing safety science deficiencies that brought us Gardasil. The FDA claims that, quote, vaccines undergo rigorous safety testing to determine their safety, end quote. But that's not true. FDA's choice to classify vaccine makers as biologic rather than drugs opened a regulatory loophole that allows vaccines to evade any meaningful safety testing. Instead, the multi-year double-blind inert placebo studies, the gold standard of safety science that the FDA requires prior to licensing other medications, mostly vaccines now on the CDC's recommended childhood vaccine schedule, are safety tested for only a few weeks or even a few days. For example, the manufacturing package insert discloses Merck's hepatitis B vaccine. Almost every American infant receives hepatitis B shot on the day of birth, underwent not 5 years, but a 5-day safety testing. 5 days. If the babies in these studies had a seizure or died on day 6, Merck was under no obligation to disclose those facts. Furthermore, many vaccines contain dangerous amounts of known neurotoxins like mercury and aluminum, and carcinogens like formaldehyde that are associated with neurodevelopmental disorders, autoimmune problems, food allergies, and cancers that might not be diagnosed for many years. A 5-day study has no way of spotting such associations. Equally shocking, the FDA does not require vaccine manufacturers to measure proposed vaccines against true inert placebos, further obscuring researchers' capacity to see adverse health effects and virtually guaranteeing that more subtle injuries, such as impaired immune responses, loss of IQ, or depression, will never be detected, no matter how widespread. Furthermore, the CDC has never studied the impacts on children's health of combining 50-plus vaccines. These lax testing requirements can save vaccine manufacturers tens of millions of dollars, and that's one of the reasons for the gold rush that has multiplied vaccines from 3 when I was a boy to 50-plus. And by the way, there's there's more. There's over 200 more coming in the pipeline. Probably they'll all be approved because that's how corrupt the FDA is. So two different points of view from two different individuals on the study of vaccines. I suggest that you go to prn.fm and the and download and watch the deadly deception, and then share it with as many people as you can. Plus, I have 50 articles up on vaccines. Share them with your friends. Share them with anyone who's had a damaged child from vaccines. Maybe they are not even aware that the damage could have come from vaccines. So let them read the articles, watch the 4 different documentaries, all multi-award-winning documentaries I've done on this topic. We're going to take a break. Come right back. Please stay with us.
You can give them to the birds and bees. I need a pond.
By the way, next week I'll be presenting our next article. We're working probably 100 hours, Richard Gale, myself, over the next 5 days to complete it. It's a powerful article. It's a part of our series challenging the co-founder of Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, the skeptics that are embedded with inside that Wikipedia, and the misinformation and the bias that is palpable that they share on health and medical topics. Maybe they're objective and fair on other topics. I haven't researched that, but on these they're not. And we're proving it. We're showing, without personal attack, I do not engage in that, but we're showing their point of view, and then we're showing you ours. And what a difference. And here's what's of interest. How did you come to hear from this, about this radio program, or to read a book? Or did you watch me on one of the 37 different PBS specials I've done, or for PBS stations around the country, or lectures? How did you get there? I'll bet you didn't get there by going to Wikipedia, because the profile they have of me, as well as many other people in the health field, is very negative. They tell you nothing of the history that I have, and I have no compunction to, you know, go into it in any depth, but to show piece by piece how everything they wrote is wrong. And you can see it. Read what they say, read our response, showing they're completely wrong. I'll just give you one example, just one little example. Have you ever heard them challenging someone based upon their education? On any of the media, never. But on me, they did. Big mistake, because when I was ABC, one of the top doctors on ABC read one of the Quack Watch's attacks on me and used it without verifying it. And as a result, I sued him for slander, and I won. He had to apologize. And the Pritikin program, I sued and won, and several others I sued and won, who were using the same misinformation. And unfortunately, the statute of limitations had passed before I became aware that this post was there, where I could have sued them and would have won all that as well. But quite frankly, I don't have the time to pay attention to all these things that are going on out there. I'm doing so many projects every day, including today, filming upstate New York. We're filming some wonderful human beings. And I won't tell you the topic. It's a really original, interesting topic, but you'll see it in the film come the late fall. In any case, I could have gone to a lot of different universities, but I wanted to go to one where I could have a challenge. I wanted to do something I had not seen done before, and that is to have a multidisciplinary integrative degree. And when I looked at the curriculum for doctoral work, I didn't see that opportunity in a lot of places. My brother's wife graduated from Columbia University, and she had one person on her doctoral committee. So I chose, through the advice of two friends, both physicians, and a psychologist, Dr. Lane Kahn, to go to one of the most challenging graduate schools in the United States. A lot of psychologists come out of that school, and that was Union Graduate School. Very hard to get into, even harder to get out. And when I sat with him and I suggested to the person that I wanted to do a multidisciplinary degree, it's like doing work in several different fields, five different fields, in fact. It took him a while to decide, because he'd never done it before. They finally allowed it. I had 9 people on my doctoral committee. These were not friends. These were not people friendly to even the idea. So it was a very arduous process, filled with a lot of contempt towards me. But in time, and actually through the advice one weekend, seeing the politics of this and the animus some of these professors held, that he gave me a way around it by challenging them, that every question that I asked them, they had to answer within 10 days. So I loaded them up with lots of questions. So finally they agreed to judge the quality of my work and not what they felt about me. I graduated with a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, the first of its kind I'm aware of in the United States. And in fact, Sherry Lieberman, who had been a protege earlier in her life, came by my office and worked there, a very nice person. And she went there and she tried it. They wouldn't allow it at that point, so she just got it in nutrition. She helped a lot of people. She was a very good person. She died. I was not even aware that she had breast cancer, or I would have jumped in immediately to help her. In any case, I was so much in contempt for how they treated me that I didn't even go to graduation. I told Dr. Yununo, pick up my degree, but put a broom with a cap and gown on it. That's it. She thought I was joking. I wasn't joking. So a couple years go by, and I get an invitation. And the invitation is what I come down to meet with some of the faculty, and I wasn't even going to go originally. Why should I? But I finally said, okay, I'm in New York. It's the middle of a week. I can go down. So I went down to the South Sea Streetport, and they had a restaurant they were meeting in and upstairs. And I went up, and here's all these people. It was packed. And the reason they came was to give me the first ever outstanding alumni in the history of the university. Okay, well, that's very nice. It's in my office in New York. It's a glass plaque. I ask them, why? Why are you doing this? Why me? Why now? When you haven't done it to, 18,000 graduate doctorates before me, including 60 who had been presidents of universities and colleges. They said, because of the uniqueness of your program, the level of your scholarship, the fact that you were up against people who did not accept, what you were doing because they didn't believe in health and nutrition as you do, and the fact you didn't quit. And for every obstacle they threw up, you found a way of meeting the standards, and you met them, you aced it, And so now I'm not aware if they have ever given any I know they never gave any before, and I'm not even sure they gave any after. But where do you see that? If I didn't tell you that, and this is a matter of record, how many people can say they're valedictorians? A lot. Magna cum laude, a gazillion. Summa cum laude, gazillion. How many can say they're the only graduate in the history of a major university to receive an outstanding excellence in scholarship? How many? One. Gee whiz. How would that look if they're trying to put you down instead of showing what you've actually done? Now, you want 1,000 more examples? Then keep throwing your crap my direction, and I'll keep showing you the truth. And these are the kind of minds that are out there in that anti-quackery community. They're the people that need to be shown for who they are. But in any case, you wouldn't know. You might not come to a retreat or a health support group or listen on the radio and benefit from it. And if anyone out there has benefited, give us a call, 888-874-4888. In a major way, I'm talking about. Major change. Something that would not have happened in traditional medicine. Here's what they can't handle. And with my program, they can't censor it. On Pacifica, they censor what they don't want to hear. Here, there's no censorship. 888-874-4888. Let's see. Anyone up yet? No one there? All right, in a moment. I'm sure someone will call in. And I've got a lot more to play here to go to. But I was just informed that just today, Muscle Stuff, which has been out of inventory, I'm sorry, for 3 months, it's back. And the reason we were out of a lot of products is because we changed manufacturers from one to a brand new one. A brand new one based upon our standards of quality, organic, and all the other things we do. And so we just got new product in today. We got Bug Out back in. I've been out of that for 6 months. And the reason it takes 6 months to make it, because if you have to see this plant out in Long Island, where this huge, giant, it looks like one of those diving chambers, but it's gigantic. You put a car in it, so big, and big bales, like 500-pound bales of an herb will come in from Africa, from South America. Like in Bug Out, I've got capsicum fruit and cinchona bark and clove buds and cramp bark and elecampane root and fennel and garlic bulbs and fresh black walnut hulls and mullein leaf and pumpkin seed and quassia wood and thyme herb and wormwood and cinnamon bark and oregano leaf and peppermint leaf, those have to be fermented. They're fermented in deionized water and till all the essential elements come out of the leaf, twig, fig, root, and then that's scooped off, and then it's put into a vegetable glycerin base, and it's kosher. So it takes 6 months, so I got a brand new bunch of bug out, and you could just imagine what that's good for. And then I also got rock hard in. I'm pretty sure you know what that's for. Same way, yohimbe bark, oat straw herb, saw palmetto berries, epimedium herb, which you've never heard of, very powerful, ginkgo biloba, ginger root, eleuthera root, murera puama root, lycium berry, fresh ashwagandha root, velvet bean seed, anise seed, cardamom seed, cinnamon bark. And again, it's fermented the same way. So it's powerful. No one does this. So now we have rock hard back, and we have bug out back, and we have muscle back. So they're all in right now. Next week, we'll get Supremacy Strawberry in and Prostate Pro back in. Call now, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and get the things that we're out of, and now we have them back, and all the rest will be back in the next week or two. Ah, we have on the line right now, what is your first name, please? Hello?
Ron.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I am celebrating life, Gary, on top of the world.
Ron, tell us about yourself, please.
Okay. Well, Gary, I made one of the best investments ever in life when I chose to come to your retreat.
Which retreat?
I came to the retreat in April at the villa in Texas.
Okay, got it.
This year. And I was given diagnosis of CLL, which is a blood-borne cancer, and COPD. And I chose to invest in my health by selecting alternative modalities of healing through diet, exercise, stress management, and rebalancing my energy. And I sought out learning about these things and other methods through your retreat there at the villa. And at the villa, I discovered so much during the retreat, such as exceeding my limitations and finding my authentic self. And after receiving some energy rebalancing work from you, Gary, I completed an ultra marathon at 29.6 miles without any training. So I would venture to say that no one with cancer and COPD has ever accomplished this. My lungs felt better than they have in 8 years since visiting with my doctor just on yesterday. The comments were that my lungs sound clear. My oxygen saturation level was 99%, and my respiration was at 18. And now I'm awaiting further testing by the pulmonary lab, and I'm expecting fantastic results. Now, regarding my CLL, my blood count numbers decreased by 13,000, which is remarkable results. The doctors are simply amazed as to how my numbers drop without any Western medical treatment. But I attributed all of this to the things that I learned at the retreat about eating a plant-based diet, about stress management, about exercising, and having a positive mental attitude. I would recommend anyone who has any challenges in life, or even those that don't have challenges, to seek out the retreat, because there's so much to be learned and gained through the teachings and the techniques that you have, that you teach us at the retreat. I am forever grateful.
It's Ron, right?
Yes, this is Ron.
Okay, because it was a little difficult for me to hear you. Let me put this in perspective to see if this is correct. You had end-stage COPD, which is a massive lung inflammation process, plus you had leukemia, and
yes.
you were very sick with two different killer diseases. And
correct.
On the last day of the treat, which was Friday morning, I asked a group of people, I just said, who would like to challenge themselves today? And a small group of people, I think it was about 10 people, said they would. I remember one woman was massively overweight. There was a woman with multiple sclerosis. There was, I never asked anybody what diseases. I didn't ask you. I didn't ask anybody about their disease. That's irrelevant to me. I don't work on the disease model. In any case, we all went down to the road, and I said, we're going to go out for a walk. I didn't tell you how far to walk that day, did I?
Oh, you just say you just wanted to see how far we could go.
That's correct. And it's a mile and a half out, a mile and a half back. And when everyone came back, I said, how do you feel? You said, good. I said, then do it again. And we had a person there, and you would sign each lap. You would just write down, you went from 3 miles, then you came back, it was 6 miles, and it was 9 miles, et cetera. Do you remember that?
Yes, exactly.
And then by the 13th mile, all the guests came down because they couldn't believe it. And yet you all were still going and cheering. And we had our staff down there, our physicians, nurses, and all watching. And everybody, and Elaine was there. She even set up a massage table, Elaine Ryan, and in case anybody got any cramps. And then they rushed down and set up a fruit juice and protein shake table. And
correct.
Every time people came back, I said, how do you feel? And they kept saying, good. And you went out there and you did not just 26 miles. That's a marathon. You did 30 miles. 30
yep.
miles. And with COPD and leukemia, with no training, none of the people had any training whatsoever. In fact, one woman said that she couldn't do anything because she had crippling arthritis. She did the marathon. They all did a marathon. Every single person finished it. And how did you all feel afterwards? Did you see people laughing and dancing and singing? Ron? Do we have Ron there? Oh, he was cut off. So, okay. Well, here's another question for you. For all your skeptics, for your quackbusters, have you ever taken one of the very sickest people that you have that you're seeing and asked them to go outside and do a marathon with them? You haven't? Can't figure that out? Don't know how that's done? And yet these people weren't like the New York City. I've done 84 marathons, so I know what it's like. I've trained 32,000 people to do marathons, and we do a year training, and we're working on increments of two miles. Don't clear your throat, Noann. You're clearing your throat right in the microphone. So we had you train over 12 months, and you do it gradually. These people had zero training. They went from zero to a marathon by their own volition. And when they finished, Ron, you're back on the line. Do you remember
yes,
people laughing, dancing, and happy?
Everyone was so elated because of what we had accomplished. And as you indicated, Gary, we didn't set out to do a marathon. I only continued because I enjoyed feeling how well my lungs felt. They felt better than they have in 8 years. So I wanted to continue to feel that. And, you know, I did the first lap and then the second lap. And before I knew it, I'd done 10 laps. That's 30 miles. And I still yep. felt great. And I was without pain.
Do you remember that every single person did it had energy and no pain and no blisters?
That was so amazing because none of us are athletes. And, you know, we had people with cancer. We had people with diabetes. We had people who have never done road work, never done power walking before, who actually completed this. This is what was so amazing. And there were seven of us who were able to accomplish this. In fact, that was everyone that you selected and that you did energy work on. We all completed it.
Well, don't try to explain to your average doctor, nurse, or anyone else in this world what energy exchange means. They're clueless and will not accept it. Don't try to explain that you went from zero to 30 miles without any training with two major life-threatening diseases, and now those diseases are reversing and your COPD, it went up to almost normal?
Yes.
Normal lung capacity?
Is coming
and
back.
That's yesterday's medical exam. You had an exam yesterday, right?
Yes, I had an exam yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Let them try to wrap their little Newtonian reductionistic minds around that.
Yes. You know, and in Gary,
my world, that's so just normal.
To me, because I have two brothers who died as a result of COPD. But I wanted to be proactive. And that's why I sought you out, Gary, and I sought the retreat out. And I'm seeing remarkable results.
Well, Ron, you're the one who did it. Each one who did it, they're the ones who had to push themselves through that process. But I looked in your faces. We were out on the road with you. I had a cart out there on the road to make sure that no one had any problems. And every time I looked, you were all smiling. I just saw nothing but beautiful smiles the entire time. And so there's a whole lot of liberation going on in that effort.
Much so. I discovered that I could exceed my limitations with overcompensating with healthy modalities of healing. And Gary, you made that happen for us. And I thank you.
All the best to you, Ron. By the way, I do not under any circumstance recommend anyone try what these people did. Don't think that you can just go out there and just take off and do a marathon. You'll end up hurting yourself. This is something that I don't discuss. I don't discuss what I do. I don't discuss energy work. I don't discuss how people are selected for things. Don't try that on your own, okay? Just know that it happened. It's like Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile. No one had done it till he did it. It didn't mean that everyone should go out the next day and try to do it. But there are always people now who will have some basis of hope or faith that they're not limited to what they were told should be their place in life with their illnesses and their imbalances. Lou Anne Panessi is on the line. Lou Anne, you just listened to this. Can you verify the accuracy of what was just stated?
Absolutely. Totally accurate. I was all choked up. Not only that, but I can tell you, Gary, that this had an amazing impact on the people waiting for them at the end. Every time they did a lap, people were jumping up and down. I think it influenced them as much as the people doing the actual task. And so it's everybody. There's pictures up on Facebook, in fact, I believe, that shows everybody at the end. Look at the smiles on those faces. Look at the energy these people have. They were just so thrilled, and it was an amazing experience. What a privilege to be part of that. And good for Ron. He's a great guy.
I forgot there are pictures of all the people who finished, and even when they're on the road, there are pictures. And the staff, the support staff, was there, 20 people supporting them. And do you remember what they were all given at the end that surprised them?
Yes. Am I allowed to say
what?
It?
Sure.
You gave them the medals that you earned at the World Meet and from the last couple of marathons that you did. And these people were so touched by that. And they will cherish those medals the rest of their lives.
It's all possible. Thank you, Luann. Well, everyone, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.